This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. You could win tickets plus camping to the 11th annual Wakarusa Music Festival. It's June 5th through the 8th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Over 150 acts will perform, including the Flaming Lips, Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, and the John Butler Trio. The winner will be announced May 30th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information are available at KUAF.com.
KUAF will air a live broadcast of Mozart in the Museum from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art May 28th at 8 p.m. This live radio broadcast is a part of the 2014 Artisphere Festival and will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra with Corrado Riveras, music director. This event is made possible in part by contributing listeners of KUAF Public Radio.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business and Politics, speaks with Speaker of the House, Davy Carter, about the issue of same-sex marriage. Also, we learn more about the weather phenomenon known as a land spout.
Plus, First Christian Church in Fayetteville prepares to celebrate its building centennial. In the latest installment of our monthly Spaces series, we take a tour of the church. And we hear sounds from last weekend's tour de farms. Our history doctor, Bill Smith, returns for another conversation and more.
But first, the Tyson Family Foundation is giving a $2 million gift to the Jones Center Endowment Fund. John Tyson, the chair of Tyson Foods, presented the check at the Jones Center in Springdale yesterday. Kelly Kemp McClintock, the chief advancement officer for the Jones Center, says the gift helps the Jones Center get closer to a fundraising goal.
In December of 2012, the Walton family announced that they would make available up to $10 million. If we could raise another $20 million.
Yesterday's gift, along with previous gifts from the CARE Foundation and the George family, puts the Jones Center within $3.5 million of reaching the goal by the November deadline. Kemp McClintock says other gifts have been secured that will be announced later. She says yesterday's gift had particularly emotional heft for Springdale and the Jones Center.
When Mr. John Tyson Sr. was beginning Tyson Foods, and Harvey Jones was a young entrepreneur starting Jones Truck Lines, it was very typical in those days that you did all of your business up and down Emma Avenue. And so the original Jones Truck Lines building was on Emma Avenue. And then you had Tyson in the very beginning, their original office on Emma.
All gifts to the Jones Center before November 15th go toward meeting the fundraising goal.
Yesterday's primary election brought few surprises in many statewide races. Democrat Mike Ross and Republican Asa Hutchinson will face off in November's general election for governor after easily winning their party's primaries. Speaking to supporters last night, Ross, who spent 12 years representing the 4th District in Congress, said he could get beyond partisan differences for the good of the state.
I want the people of Arkansas to know that I will work with anyone who will work with me to make Arkansas an even better place to live, work, and raise a family. Let's put an end to the partisan bickering and get the job done.
Republican Asa Hutchinson, who represented the state's 3rd congressional district more than a decade ago, told his supporters there are clear differences between him and his Democratic opponent.
I have a high regard for Mike as a person, as someone who has served our country in Congress. But let me tell you, we have differences in our approach to government, in our belief, in the direction that we should go as a state. And we want to outline those differences in this fall election.
Hutchinson and Ross will face Libertarian nominee Frank Gilbert and Green Party nominee Joshua Drake. In addition, Congressman Tim Griffin won the Republican primary for lieutenant governor with more than 60% of the vote.
Not every race was as easily won, though. In the 4th Congressional District Republican primary, Representative Bruce Westerman won the party's nomination with less than 10% of the vote separating him and Tommy Mall. The three-way Republican race for Attorney General was similarly close, with Leslie Rutledge coming out in front in the election with 47% of the vote, compared to 39% for David Sterling, and less than 14% of the vote for Patricia Nation. The close race means a runoff election will be held June 10th between Rutledge and Sterling. Even closer in yesterday's election was the sales tax issue in Crawford County. As of this morning, both issues passed with more than 51% of the county's voters in favor of and more than 48% against the collective sales tax increase of 0.75 cents aimed at raising money for a new county jail.
In judicial races, Court of Appeals Judge Robin Wynn won a 12,000-vote margin over Tim Cullen for the position 2 spot on the state Supreme Court. Meanwhile, Stacey Zimmerman won a narrow victory of more than 500 votes over Lisa Parks in the District 4 Division 3 Circuit Judge race. And Judge Bill Story remains on the bench in Fayetteville District Court. He defeated Tim Snively with 2/3 of the vote and a margin of more than 2,000 votes.
Earlier this week, Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel approved the wording of a potential ballot initiative that, if approved, would abolish the notion of wet and dry counties in Arkansas. David Couch, a Little Rock attorney, says though prohibiting retail sales of alcohol in dry counties is an idea that dates back to the end of Prohibition, there are a number of reasons he proposed the initiative.
Over the years, the retail liquor lobby has amended the wet-dry statutes so many times that you have to get 38% of the registered voters in a particular county to get a measure on the ballot. In this last legislative session, they also added some restrictions upon the canvassers and may have changed the deadlines, the times that you have to do it. So if you look at it from a practical perspective, they've made it so difficult to do in one county that only someone like Walmart or some other organization like that that has, you know, a lot of financial resources will be able to get done.
According to campaign contribution records filed with the Arkansas Ethics Commission, Tom and Stuart Walton in 2012 collectively contributed more than $632,000 to Keep Dollars in Benton County, which successfully pushed for legalizing alcohol sales in that county. Though Couch's proposed ballot initiative would legalize alcohol sales in all of the state's 75 counties, he says it wouldn't change much about the overall legislation of alcohol in the state.
It wouldn't change a thing other than wet and dry. The same regulations would be in effect. The same rules would be in effect, and it gives the power to the General Assembly to change those as they see fit in the future. All it does is just legalize the sale of alcoholic beverages in every county in the state of Arkansas.
But before voters can decide on the issue, 78,133 signatures are required to put the initiative on the November ballot. Couch says the canvassing company collecting signatures for this issue is certain it can collect those signatures before July 7th.
Today, the University of Arkansas is reversing last week's decision to offer health insurance plans to legally wed same-sex couples. According to the university, the UA General Legal Counsel determined that the stay on same-sex marriage issued by the state Supreme Court means the university won't be able to allow same-sex spouses to be added to UA employee insurance plans. The decision applies to same-sex marriages performed in Arkansas and in other states or countries.
The 600 block of West Maple Street in Fayetteville is closed for the next week as city crews install a water main and repair a sewer main. The work is causing both lanes to be closed between Gregg and Whittam Avenues from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. through next Wednesday, though the street will be open during Memorial Day weekend.
The 20th-ranked Razorback baseball team moves on in the SEC baseball tournament after defeating Texas A&M yesterday 4-0. The tournament continues today in Hoover, Alabama, when Arkansas faces 10th-ranked Ole Miss.
Tonight, expect mostly clear skies with overnight lows in the lower 60s. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny with highs in the mid to upper 80s. Tomorrow evening, mostly clear, lows in the lower 60s.
This is Ozarks at Large. A big story over the last few weeks has revolved around the issue of same-sex marriage. On May 9th, Pulaski County Judge Chris Piazza ruled the state's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional. This resulted in jubilation for gay couples, a firestorm of pushback from conservatives, long lines at the county courthouse, and calls for Piazza's impeachment. By the week's end, the controversy was still swirling as a state appeal of the decision was still up in the air with the Arkansas Supreme Court, which came down with a ruling on Friday that issued a stay in the case. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics recently discussed the week's unfoldings with Arkansas Speaker of the House, Davey Carter.
I guess first questions first, and did Judge Piazza get the ruling right?
Well, that's for, and I've been consistent on this from the moment it came out. I mean, that's for our appellate court system to determine. I mean, I'm disappointed that he did it on Friday afternoon and didn't stay the ruling, and because there was just a little chaos there.
Right.
But, you know, calls for his impeachment and these things and these reactions, airy statements and those type of things, you know, I don't agree with. I mean, I'm a believer in our three system, you know, of government, and I'm a believer in the judicial branch of government. And ultimately, that question will have to be answered by the high courts. And, you know, I believe in our system. That's the system of self-governing that we've had for hundreds of years, and we have to let that play its course.
And you did talk about, there was immediate talk of impeaching Judge Piazza on that. You came out very strongly with a statement last week. You basically said, that's just not going to happen. That's a slippery slope. That's why we have separation of powers. That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard of. On Friday morning, there was a push in the Arkansas Legislative Council to try to move a resolution forward to deal with potential impeachment. You voted against that resolution.
You know, the resolution had some other things in there, not necessarily dealing with impeachment. But, you know, the end of the whole story is here that, you know, that constitutional question, whether you like it or not, has to be answered at the Supreme Court. And I think this decision will go to the Arkansas Supreme Court. And I think there's a very good chance that this case, this particular case, will go to the United States Supreme Court. And you know, we live in the United States of America, and we have men and women that have, you know, that have died in many wars fighting for our country and the way we live. And that's what governs our society. And we have to have faith in the court system. And ultimately, I'm absolutely convinced and unwavering that that decision needs to be made there.
But there is in the Arkansas State Constitution a provision for removing judges as well as other constitutional officers from office. There is a process for that. You have as many as 50 members of the Arkansas General Assembly that have signed onto this petition to explore that as an option. How do you give them their due, and how do you deal with that as Speaker of the House?
Every member's got a right to file and pursue whatever policy things that he or she wants to do. And I'm not here to impede that. I just make it well known that I'm going to fight it. There's no significance on the outcome of the issue at hand. It's irrelevant. It would take place, you know, months away, you know, maybe even perhaps after the Supreme Court rules. I mean, what happens if the Supreme Court upholds it? We're going to impeach the Supreme Court judges. I mean, it's just a slippery slope. It doesn't matter that it's this subject matter. It could have been on domestic relations, child custody, or whatever. When you get the General Assembly that they don't like decisions of the judicial branch, and you go into trying to impeaching them, that is an absolute slippery slope, and I stand behind that.
But your issue is that we should let the separation of powers work as it's intended to. It's not that you necessarily agree or disagree with the judicial decision itself.
The right avenue to make this constitutional holding ultimately it's going to be the United States Supreme Court. And the question is, does our state constitution, you know, run amok of the United States Constitution? Davey Carter can't answer that question. Roby Brock can't answer that question. It's going to have to go to the United States Supreme Court. And we live here. We live in a civilized society. And that's the way we self-govern. And we have to have faith in the system that our forefathers have set up so long ago.
Let's shift gears. Let's talk about another potential issue, big legislative issue, a teacher insurance fix. There was a special session last year to deal with some shortcomings in the teacher insurance fund. New report out from the task force that has some recommendations. Will there be another special session to deal with teacher insurance?
I met with Representative Harold Copenhaver, who I put on the task force and who's the House chair along with Senator Hendren. I did not meet with Senator Hendren today. Got a great report from Harold. I would say that has worked exactly like we had planned it to work. We had a problem. We funded it. We put them together to make changes. And we told everybody there's going to be changes. This cannot be sustainable. Yes, I'm going to call the governor probably tomorrow. My recommendation is we have a special session. I think we have to do it. Those men and women on that committee have done an outstanding job, and we are not at the state level going to be able to or have any desire or want to continue to fund $30, $40, $50 million on these shortcomings. And the if we don't do anything, it's $70 million. They're already in the hole. Mm-hmm. And these recommendations, they're going to be there may be some heartburn about them, but at the end of the day, we've got to make that plan process sustainable, and they work together in a bipartisan way. I'm going to ask the governor to have a special session. I hope he takes us up on that. I know he will, because it's the state's going to have to get our arms around and make these changes before August, before all these plans start going into effect.
And if the legislature is in a special session, they will be convened and they could act on these articles of impeachment if they want to. Could they not?
That could be a possibility. I'm hopeful that angst is going to die down. Look, there's no questioning this is a controversial issue. They need to be focused on the things that can affect the outcome. That has zero effect on the outcome, and it's the outweigh with that with the slippery slope on the things that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. I think it's an unwise thing to do, and I'm going to oppose that.
Let's talk about this past week, some kind of preliminary numbers from hospital administrators around the state talking about the number of uninsured patients coming into their ERs. Do you see that those statistics, those numbers that were presented, basically a 24% decline in uninsured patients coming to the ERs, interesting statistics to you, or do you see a correlation between that and the private option?
Absolute correlation. I mean, that's there's no denying that's had already started to have an effect on how the uninsured gets access to health care. And it's good to see it in writing, and it's good to hear that testimony. And when you put together policy like that from scratch, there are things out there that you think and you analyze and you make the best decisions. But when the data starts coming back in. To back that up, it's a good feeling. So I think we're absolutely headed in the right direction. Nobody said this was going to be perfect from the start, mm-hmm. And I fully expect this to be tweaked along the way. And whatever that means, tweaked along the way, I don't know. But it was good to see, and it backed up what all everybody thought about how people were going to behave differently when they didn't have any insurance or they have insurance policy. And so I think that backed that up.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics, speaking with Arkansas Speaker of the House Davey Carter. Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T. Challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity, backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday and meet Paul Thorne with a Southern Mississippi accent, boyish charm, talking about his own style of bluesy rock. Paul came into the studio when he was in town last month, and he headlines the Friday night of the Fort Smith Riverfront Blues Festival, June 20th. Again, that's the Generic Blue Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
When looking at history, it's not uncommon to compare the past with the present. For example, recent events may have caused some to compare Vladimir Putin to Adolf Hitler.
Of all the ones today, this is the one that gets the most traction because Vladimir Putin's attempt to bring Crimea back into Russia sounds like some sort of echo of Adolf Hitler's appeal to reunite the Volk through annexing parts of Czechoslovakia. I've got to call NIT.
A conversation with our history doctor, Bill Smith, coming up in the second half hour of Ozarks at Large.
On April 27th, an EF4 tornado that ripped through Faulkner, Randolph, White, and Pulaski counties killed 15 people and triggered a federal disaster declaration and a presidential visit. A few weeks later, on May 13th, another storm system swept through the region, this time creating a possible land spout north of Ozark in Faulkner County. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich decided to contact the National Weather Service in Tulsa to learn more about the phenomenon, as well as hazards associated with land spouts.
Ed Calanese is a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Tulsa. Calanese investigates and issues scientific reports on storms in our region and conducts storm spotter trainings. He says they're still investigating the reported May 13th land spout near Ozark, which has yet to be confirmed.
Well, a land spout is caused by low-level spin in the atmosphere. It's usually not visible. So there's pre-existing spin in the atmosphere, in the lower atmosphere. And usually when a land spout forms, there's some strong updraft mechanism that draws that pre-existing area of rotating air upward. As it draws it upward toward the cloud, it stretches it. And as it stretches and tightens, it becomes stronger. That's how a land spout tornado forms. It's different than supercell tornado processes, like the storms that produced tornadoes on April 27th. That's a totally different process. And like I said, this is still under investigation. We're not sure if this was a land spout. It's not a classic land spout situation, that's for sure. It looks like it may have formed along the leading edge of a gust front. It was very, very humid air ahead of that gust front. As you get lift along that leading edge of that gust front or that outflow, that the storms that are moving in from the west to the east, that uplift of air causes condensation to form because the air is so humid. So it draws that very humid air upward, and it doesn't take very long for it to condense and form clouds. So you see that condensation feature form from the low levels up toward the cloud. The thing about this is we're not hearing a lot of reports of people who've seen this and took pictures of it, of whether it was strongly rotating or not. So if it was a tornado, there would be clear evidence of pretty strong rotation in that feature.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration defines land spouts on its glossary page as a tornado that does not arise from organized storm scale rotation and therefore is not visually associated with a wall cloud or mesocyclone on radar. By NOAA's definition, land spouts typically are observed beneath towering cumulus clouds and are the land-based equivalent of water spouts. Both land spouts and water spouts may appear as translucent, undulating, spiraling tubes. Land spouts over tilled fields resemble dirt funnels, similar to tiny dirt devils you may see on super windy days. Tornadoes that form over water during a severe storm are called tornadic water spouts. But according to NOAA, fair weather water spouts also occur along dark, flat base of line-developing cumulus clouds. Fair weather water spouts tend to dissipate upon reaching land. But if a tornadic water spout moves on shore, the National Weather Service will issue a tornado warning due to the potential threat to property and people. National Weather Service meteorologist Ed Calanese says they're currently studying photographs taken by locals of the Ozark funnel to determine its status. And he also wants to make clear that land spouts, like tornadoes, should never be taken casually.
It forms differently, but it has the same potential. It has the same dangers with it. Flying debris. I've seen land spout tornadoes produce damage up to EF2 on the enhanced Fujita scale. So some land spouts in the proper environment can produce some pretty significant damage.
Ed Calanese says he's not aware of any data on the number of land spouts in the region. The National Weather Service has not received any damage reports associated with a possible May 13th land spout. and continues to survey the situation. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To take a look at the reported land spout near Ozark, visit the 5 News weather blog page at 5newsonline.com. The Artist Fair Festival Orchestra of 2014 returns to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art to present Mozart in the Museum May 28th. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, classical music host at KUAF. Would you like 2 tickets to the sold-out concert? Simply go to Of Note with Katie Henriksen on Facebook and share the Artist Fair Festival Orchestra picture. You'll be entered to win 2 tickets. I'll draw a name May 27th. Thanks and good luck.
Good day. It is Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. And with me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is the coolest thing we've talked about in a long time.
Really? I'm excited.
This is cool.
Okay.
This is awesome. This is called a wrecking ball.
Okay. Reminds me of Miley Cyrus.
Okay. I'll go with that. The Art Center of the Ozarks, Harry Blundell, the director of theater, had just finished Blithe Spirit and was going to rest for a while. You know, you finish a show, you're going to rest a while. And he had a dream, literally, about having a big party in the warehouse space that they're fixing to tear down.
Sounds like fun.
He got up and he talked to the staff about it, and they said, let's do it. And so the wrecking ball is going to happen on May 30th.
I see.
And there's going to be, I'm not supposed to use the word graffiti, but there's going to be street art. There's going to be a ton of music. The headliner is Benjamin Del Shreve. There's going to be food trucks. It's going to be amazing.
Sounds cool.
And it's free. Free.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's a celebration of old Springdale, because this building was Springdale Ford and then Bobby Hopper Ford. It's a celebration of new Springdale, because once the buildings are gone, there's going to be parking, but also a green space that can be used for concerts and will sort of hook into the trail system. And it's a celebration of the ACO, because it's the next step in their moving forward with all of the building remodeling and so forth. So it's going to be a really cool, awesome thing. Matt Miller, Sarah Sagerlin, all sorts of people are going to be there doing art. And besides Benjamin Del Shreve, there will be music by Unza, Chris Cash, Woody and Sunshine, and Waterwalk. Baller and Nomad's Natural Plate will be there, and there'll be beer from Core Brewery.
Lots of big local names.
5 to 11 on May 30th. It's the old Springdale Ford building next to the Art Center of the Ozarks. And you can find out more at 751-5441.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Several churches are located near the intersection of College Avenue and Dixon Street in Fayetteville. There's Fayetteville First Baptist Church, Central United Methodist Church, St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and First Christian Church Disciples of Christ. Sunday, First Christian Church will celebrate the building's 100th anniversary. Although the building is a century old, its membership dates back 166 years. The church can trace its roots to the winter of 1848 after a 12-day tent meeting held by 2 pastors, Robert Graham and John T. Johnson. A few years later, Graham founded Arkansas College on the grounds where the church now stands. Betty Arambell is a 7th-generation Disciples of Christ member. She says her family moved to Fayetteville in 1965 when she was just a year old, and today she is the church's historian.
You know, a lot of people look at Old Main and they think that was the first college here, and it wasn't. There was also Cane Hill College, but the Arkansas College got in one day before Cane Hill, so we take great pride in that. but that's where it was. The church was originally on the square, on the southwest corner of the square. And during the Civil War, the ministers were kind of siding with the, not that you could, whether it would have made a difference, but they were kind of siding with the North. And at some point, they had to leave the area. But somewhere during the Civil War, the church the church on the square was burned, and so was the college.
Following the war, a new church was constructed in 1872 on the location where Arkansas College once stood. In 1912, a faulty coal furnace caused another fire that destroyed that church. The current building was rebuilt over the course of 17 months at a cost of $25,000, and it was officially dedicated on May 24, 1914. The red brick building was designed by architect A.O. Clark, and it towers over those passing by on College Avenue. The words First Christian Church are etched into white stone over the arches on the west side of the building. Guests who park in the south parking lot can enter the building by walking past a small water feature and up a staircase to the church's office. Located immediately to your left is a door to the sanctuary, which is by far the most impressive space in the church. The room has a large open layout with rows of wooden pews descending toward the east end of the room, where the choir loft, pipe organ, pulpit, and lectern are all located. The arched pews are covered with red seat cushions that match the sanctuary's red carpet.
Our pews are 100 years old, and at one point there was talk of changing those out, and a couple of guys in the church, when they started pricing them, that got real expensive quickly, and we're one of the few churches that have arched pews. That's a really, you won't find that anymore, new. So we had a couple of guys in the church, they were retired, and pew by pew they took out the pews and would move them over to the side, and had actually made tools to split the wood, re-glue, and so they re-glued them and added a little extra support underneath, and pew by pew refurnished them all. And so we hope they'll last another 100 years.
Betty estimates the sanctuary can seat 250 to 300 people. Helping the church seat more guests is an annex located on the north side of the room. The annex can be closed off from the sanctuary by closing these large, towering wooden doors. Betty estimates the four dark-colored panels that slide along a track and lock into place measure 30 feet by 40 feet. The church also has 42 stained glass windows, several of which are located in the sanctuary. No church records exist to date or identify the studio or artist who created the church's stained glass windows, but some of the larger ones are copies of popular designs used in churches around the world. A western window depicts Jesus rescuing Peter from the sea and is based on a painting by Swedish-American artist Herman Soderstrom. David Calhoun of DNS Stained Glass in Lowell provided restoration work of the windows in the late 1990s, and according to church documents, he said the glass is referred to as cat's paw. One of 13 textures of glass made at Kokomo Opalescent Glass Company in Kokomo, Indiana. A large square stained glass window is located in the center of the white vaulted ceiling, and there's actually an attic space behind it. To reach it, you must go back toward the lobby and up a set of stairs to the church's third floor. Betty says a few years ago, this space became the latest one to be remodeled.
So this whole area up here was totally gutted, and all the space was reconfigured. One of the things that is original are the wood floors. This was wood that was saved from the original flooring and put down and redone. So we now have a multimedia room that we use for Sunday school and also meetings.
The upstairs also includes a bathroom and shower area for people on mission trips who stay at the church. The hallway wraps around back toward the sanctuary, and Betty points out a small wooden door that she estimates to be 3 feet by 3 feet. She says that used to be one of the ways you could get to the space above the sanctuary. Now you can go up another flight of stairs and open a regular-sized door to an attic space that reveals the church's old wooden beams, pink insulation, and that square stained glass window you can see overhead when you're sitting in the sanctuary.
This is above the sanctuary. So, as a kid, I had a couple of friends, and we could crawl up here. And at one point, my friend went home, and she told her dad, and he goes, "Well, whatever you do, don't step on the plaster." And we were like, "Oh my, you know." So from there on, we made sure we stayed on the wood, and thank God we didn't fall through the ceiling. That would have been a mess. We'd been in trouble.
At times, the church feels like a labyrinth, with meeting rooms, classrooms, and bathrooms located in every nook and cranny. It seems as though no space goes to waste. Helping guests navigate the century-old building are maroon signs mounted on walls whose white lettering and arrows point you in the right direction. If you head back down to the office, you can take another set of stairs down to the basement. The game room is located to the west and contains white block walls decorated with blue, red, yellow, and green paint splatters. Church historian Betty Arambell notes this room's purpose has changed several times, and now it's filled with items like a foosball table and an air hockey table. If you head to the east, you'll find yourself in the fellowship hall, which is filled with tables and chairs that can be used for meetings or dinners. After moving some chairs in a corner, Betty opens a door behind them and reveals another storage closet.
So, as another story, as I was when I was a kid, this was always the place that there was a dead possum. Who knows whether it was true or not? It kept us out of here, though.
Another interesting part of this room is you can see part of the church's brick wall, as well as old rock walls beneath it that Betty thinks may have been part of the original church's foundation. The fellowship hall leads into the kitchen, which was added in 1965 and was updated in the 80s. The two-story Christian education building was also added onto the church in 1965. A nursery is located on the first level of the Christian Ed building, and classrooms are located on both floors. While the church has about 300 participating members, Betty says lots of folks who don't attend her church are familiar with the outside of the building.
A lot of people don't know about the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, but when you tell them where the church is and you say, well, it's red brick, it's there by the courthouse, and they'll go, oh, the one with the really pretty stained glass windows. Like, yeah, that's it. And they'll go, I've never been in there, but yeah, that's such a pretty church.
If you're interested in getting a look at the inside of this church, First Christian Church Disciples of Christ will be hosting an event to celebrate the building's 100th anniversary this Sunday. There will be one worship service at 10 a.m., which Betty says will incorporate music and scriptures that were read during the original dedication. A meal will be served after, and the cost is $10 for adults and $5 for children 12 and younger. You can RSVP by calling 442-4674. More information is available at fccfayetteville.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Spring is a busy time for farms, but last weekend, a few farms in northwest Arkansas were bustling with even more than the usual activity. Ozark Natural Foods sponsored the first ever tour to farms. Patrons of ONF were able to visit 9 different area farms and watch demonstrations. Here are some sounds from the tour collected this weekend.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go and we'll pick the feed bins, and then I'll show you the feed we use. I brush hog paths. No one wants to walk through waist high pesky and ryegrass.
My name is Terrell Spencer. Folks know me as Spence, right, and I own Across the Creek Farm. So we have a 20-acre field here that we're looking at. It's kind of like a gentle V. You know, it both ends are high. It overlooks, I think that's Kessler Mountain. The land here that we're on, it's called we call it New Pear, but it used to be the Pear Farm, and it used to be a fruit production farm. I mean, back in the 20s or 30s, the Pritchard family owned it. And so it's neat to see this land. This land used to produce a lot of food for Fayetteville, and we're real close to Fayetteville. I can see Razorback Stadium from part of the farm. So it's neat for that land to be in production again, feeding Fayetteville.
My name is Cindy Lawrence, and I live in Centerton, Arkansas. And I am city coming to country, so this is a very new experience for me, and it was really exciting to see an actual chicken farm in the workings and doing it holistically, doing it. To me, it's my dream. So,
my name's Verona Friday, and I'm 9. I go to Washington Elementary. I went to plenty different farms. And it was fun. They're good farmers, a lot of them.
My name is Sam Friday, and I'm the father of Verona over there. It's a good experience, and I hope they have it again because, you know, it helps really connect the community to the farms and the food to the person in the community.
I'm Pauline Thiessen. I'm the produce manager up at Ozark Natural Foods Cooperative. I organized 8 different farms, and then we just gave the passports out. We had people register at the store, say, hey, I want to go, and then they came back and picked up their passport, which had all the addresses of the farms in it, and allowed people to carpool and make their own travel arrangements. And then I'm just running ahead of them to set up the food and get people stamped in and, you know, make sure everything's going smoothly. I was not really sure what to expect, but everyone that I've spoken with has just been very thankful that they can come and do this, that we're organizing this, that Ozark Natural Foods is hosting this in conjunction with the farmers. They're really, like, I've heard a lot of, I'm learning a lot, which is great. So, like, for their own gardens and then just about the food. So I think it's a great success, and I'm really happy and proud of it. Next, we're actually headed just right down this same dirt road to Ansel's Produce. Ansel is Ansel and Jenny, she still works at the store. Ansel used to, and he's done a lot of internships at other organic farms, and he started his own farm. So we're going to get to see some horse plowing, and he's going to talk a little bit about what it takes to make a leap into farming as the next generation.
My name's Ansel Ogle. I've been farming on and off in the Ozarks since I was 18, so about 6 years now, 7 or 8 years, and grew up around here, and I'm trying to start an organic vegetable farm here on the pear farm, and it's all organic, and I'm trying to get away from fossil fuels. My demonstration here is for horse farming. So this is Dick Courteau. He's been a draft horseman for a long time, since the 60s, 50s, and since in that time, and he's plowing today and harrowing. A plow is breaks the sod, and then the harrow comes and breaks the soil and the sod apart. And 2 weeks, once it's all started to decompose, I come back and I till once. I do some minimal tilling, and I'll come and till once, and then I'll plant into that. I grow mainly sweet potatoes, cucumbers, onions, and lettuce heads.
Well, folks, you know, the only cheat here is me. This is not really the way you do it, and I've done it for many miles. Half the line's behind your back, and you're running the whole thing. But my leg is so bad, I can't follow on these anymore, so I'm cheating. I'm up here riding and let somebody else do the work.
My name is Cadence Conway, and I go to Holcomb Elementary, and I just plowed a horse for the first time, and it felt a little scary at first, and I liked it.
My name is Jack Kaiser, and I'm a retired engineer. I moved to Fayetteville about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and came here because it's a good place to garden. We grow our own food, a lot of our own food. We're expanding our own production, so being here is given us a few insights, like the hoop frames that we've seen over across the road. That design would be very affordable and just the right size for a backyard greenhouse. I think it's great because it's not just learning where the food comes from, but meeting other people who enjoy the same thing. So you have something in common with them. You wouldn't have met them otherwise without doing this.
Overall, we had 250 people register for the event. And because we didn't really know what to expect, we've been keeping up with it at each farm. And so far, we've had about 70 to 80 at least at each farm visit, and over 100 at some of the events that weren't overlapping. So it's been really great to see all the different types of people come out here. I've seen kids, we've had the whole range, kids to adults, teenagers to, you know, senior citizens. We've had an interest from every spectrum show up. I'm going to try to do this again next year and, you know, include some other farms that are a little bit farther out. Now that I see how much enthusiasm there is for it, and kind of like maybe we'll go out to some of my Eureka farms or my Carroll County farms.
Next time on the TED Radio Hour, we ask, what's your biggest fear?
Just people.
One of my most vivid fears is being on a plane imagining it crashing.
I'm scared of speaking on the phone.
Is there anything that you're afraid of right now?
No.
I'm Guy Raz. We'll explore fear and fearlessness. That's on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to 91.3 FM.
The past few months have provided several opportunities to mark milestone anniversaries of major events. From the assassination of President Kennedy to the arrival of the Beatles in the United States. Our history doctor, Bill Smith, says along with the observations come the temptations to compare the past with the present. In his latest Where History conversation with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums, he says one does not always equal the other.
I'm consistently surprised that folks will confuse the collection of facts with history. You know, we find ourselves slavishly following that old Santiano line, you know, if we can just study the past and assemble the totem or turn the wheels of the codex, that the past will give us the pathway into the future.
All we have to do is understand the past, and we know exactly what to do.
And I just find myself wanting to say, did you come to learn, or in the sage words of Paul Simon, did you come to look for America? Because we're in the middle of a whole bunch of search-and-replace history that's afoot with callbacks to the 1930s, and we can just solve where everything's going by look at these. This person equals this person's.
This is one of your least favorite things I think we're going to when someone says blank equals Hitler.
Exactly, and Putin equals Hitler is where you start.
Okay.
Of all the ones today, this is the one that gets the most traction because Vladimir Putin's attempt to bring Crimea back into Russia sounds like some sort of echo of Adolf Hitler's appeal to reunite the Volk through annexing parts of Czechoslovakia. I've got to call nit to this one.
So Angela Merkel equals the Kaiser?
Well, you know, maybe the most fun as Angela Merkel, a child of the former East German state, cast as the inheritor of the great Prussian kings. And, you know, Germany certainly stands as the economic colossus astride the space between Europe and Russia. But that we can expect her to begin to rolling east into Russia, or I love this co-rumor that she's going to pair with Putin and divide off the Ukraine like Hitler and Stalin did with Poland, another 1930s predecessor, doesn't fit.
Well, and then there are people who have been critical of our president's handling with this, saying he's not doing enough. So does that make him the Neville Chamberlain in their eyes?
Oh, this is an absolute favor of the online folks, because they like to bring, here's my air quotes, people, appeasement into the forefront every time American foreign policy doesn't forcefully make demands or changes. It may be better said that Obama equals FDR, because let's be realistic. They are American presidents presented with essentially the same dilemma. Roosevelt had the Red Army of the Soviet Union occupying most of Eastern Europe, all prepared to create the great buffer zone for the Soviet Union between post-war Germany and themselves. And Roosevelt was in no physical position, not his health, not his mental capacity, not his advisors. Physically, no way you were going to send the United States Army to remove the Red Army and change the course of Eastern Europe. It wasn't going to happen. That's not appeasement.
Okay. Others?
Well, you know, this one's just for me.
Mm-hmm.
Paul equals Lindbergh.
Paul is in Senator Rand Paul?
Rand and Ron.
I'll call it the Pauls.
The Pauls.
And Lindbergh, of course, Charles Lindbergh, I assume, sort of a neutralist there?
Well, they embody a modern type of isolationism in the Pauls that sort of equates to Charles Lindbergh, who fronted isolationism in the late 30s and all the way into the middle of 1941. You know, we need to pull America back. We need to get out of all these places. We need to retreat from the world because it's none of our business. You know, you could make some arguments that there is a parallel there, but once again, once you peel these back, they don't have
it's not that simple.
Equality. It's not that simple.
Does it only work with people, or could someone say the recession that started in the crash of 08, in the fall of 08, is really equal to the depression of 29?
Yeah, I've seen that great recession equals great depression kind of thing, and another online favorite, folks like Shadow Stats, who want to claim that the real level of unemployment is much higher than we are being led to believe and that we are at near historic economic distress levels, not to minimize the problems that are still being experienced regionally around the country and sort of the slow growth we're having. But people aren't in lines for soup kitchens and selling apples on the corners and quite literally 25% unemployment happening. I know that we have pockets of our social strata and our economic strata that are experiencing those levels of unemployment, but as a whole, the nation is not in that same kind of pickle.
So with all these facts,
you get to add it up into a little Santayana-like roadmap. You know, we can just say we're moments away from the onset of global war, because if I want to take these facts and say they all equivocate and that's where it led to in the middle of the 20th century, that's where we're headed here in the 21st.
Right.
And now I will say, we did just have an airplane mysteriously disappear into the Pacific. So, you know, there's another 1930s coincidence. But, you know,
Amelia Earhart.
Amelia Earhart, not exactly. I mean, look, everybody wants to play this parlor game. And it becomes great fun for pundits to write columns based on it. Why? Because we let them become the one-eyed man in the land of the historically blind. These things from the 30s, they don't fit our current situations. Cannabis legislation movements aren't the same thing as prohibition in the 21st century for us now. Do things repeat? Seems like it a lot. Are they the same? No more than Iraq or Afghanistan ended up being Vietnam. Sure, there were some parallels. You had an Abu Ghraib for a My Lai, weapons of mass destruction, and a Gulf of Tonkin. But instead, they become their own little slices of hell, not some sort of easily transposed facts.
So what are we to do? I mean, to be aware of the past, but not to fully embrace this.
I learned some fantastic things recently listening to, of all things, a cooking podcast.
A cooking podcast.
Indeed.
A cooking podcast.
Indeed.
Okay.
You can find truth in many places. And this host had a grand closing line. Modern man laughs at history, but eventually history laughs at us.
Well, until Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel are back together,
we're history.
Bill Smith's conversations with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums are an occasional feature of Ozarks at Large. If there is a subject related to history you'd like our history doctor to address, let us know by sending an email to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The songs of Latin America's indigenous tribes are being celebrated in new music that adds a hip-hop and electronica beat. The DJ Sessions, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF.
KUAF will broadcast Mozart in the Museum live from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. That's May 28th at 8 p.m. Hosted by KUAF's Kyle Kellums and Katie Henriksen, this live broadcast will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, interviews, and more. This event is made possible in part by contributors of KUAF Public Radio.
KUAF is supported by ModThink, a social media strategy firm offering team-driven social media solutions for small and medium businesses and organizations. More information available on the web at modthink.com.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Greenwood.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grahatum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll end today's show with some music by Lucero. The song is called Texas and Tennessee. The band will be at Georgia's Majestic Lounge tomorrow and Friday night. More information at georgiasmajesticlounge.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a great Wednesday.
It was what I had come in to me. You were unlike anything before. Like magic, devil, killer, I was yours. It was the early days of rock and roll. It was Otis, it was Memphis soul. It was a plane crash, it was overnight. It was burning fast and burning bright. Baby, don't you talk no more. That look is loud enough. You don't have to tell me.